So, I now am a member of Cinewiz, a cinema chain in the UK. I'm one of their members. I'm an unlimited member. I'm a member of Origins Limitless and Cinewiz Unlimited. So, there you go. So, it means that all I have to do is see cool indie movies, like, for example, Eileen starring Anne Hathaway and Tomasin McKenzie, is get on a bus for £2 that takes me to Wickham to see a movie. And it takes about 35 to 50 minutes, sometimes an hour, to get there. And I tell you what, guys, like, that is pretty frigging cool to me. Because I love seeing movies like this, and I think very much, if you want to support indie cinema, get off your ass and go see it, you know? Because otherwise, what are you doing? Like, if you don't get off your ass and go and support it, it's not going to be made. And movies like this are wonderful, because this is a very strange, very, very strange, quaint, weird, erratic, bizarre, and overall rewarding movie. Emphasis on weird, because it is weird. It's really, really weird, but in a good way, because it makes you think, and also it's just generally weird and short. But the fundamental crux of the movie is rooted in performances of Tomasin McKenzie and Anne Hathaway. Tomasin McKenzie's more of the lead. In fact, she is the lead. She plays the Eileen of the movie's title, who may or may not have a traumatic childhood, may or may not be who we think she is. Anne Hathaway may or may not be who we think she is either. In fact, non-characters in the movie might be who you think they are, because it is a mindfuck of a movie, in the purest terms. I don't want to spoil anything, but it would definitely fuck with your mind. But at the same time, it's also got a very, whether it's genuine or not, the central aesthetic relationship between Eileen and Rebecca, Anne Hathaway's character, is actually oddly sweet and touching, although it might not be if you think about it too hard. But in general, it's a nice dynamic they've got between them, because they clearly, if they get on famously off screen, or they're just even better actors than you think they are. But it cements my view that Tomasin McKenzie is, like, in terms of the good young actresses at the moment, oh my god, like, she is a excellent actress. Between this, Old, and Last Night in Soho, she is just, like, having a banging time at cinema at the moment, in terms of really good performances and generally good movies, like sort of genre stuff you'd expect. I mean, maybe it's even more true of this than those ones, because in this one, she's got anchored the entire movie and play a character who goes through various shifts in personality and nature, and a really detailed arc, and also a sad arc, because the more you think about the movie, the more you realize the time period it's set in, it's clear that she's put down by the aesthetics of time period in question, and she's clearly struggling in a very sexist time against women. So it's exemplified by the opening scenes of Anne Hathaway's character, where the men are particularly sexist towards her in a very uncomfortable, very, very awkward way. And just the general nature of material means that things don't get much better for either of them. Eileen's got a horrible life at home with a terrible dad. She works in prison for wayward boys. And generally, it's just a tough watch. But in a very sweet way, which is quite an odd thing to say. But I definitely recommend it. If you can find this movie, go see it. I'm not spoiling anymore, because you need to see it and you need to experience it in its truest format, but this is one of those movies you should go out there and see, because it's not going to get to many cinemas. Granted, I had travelled quite a long way to see it, and not everyone can, but if you like weird esoteric cinema that's a bit of a mindfuck, this is definitely a movie go see. It's one which will leave you thinking, one which will give you lots of things that you can ponder, and it'll come up with lots of theories, and some of them might be accurate, some of them might not. The movie itself isn't going to say one way or the other, which is actually very cool. And it's also short. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It definitely doesn't, because it's quite a jolt of an ending. But no, very good. Tomas McKenzie's amazing in it. Like, if there was justice, there'd definitely be an Oscar nomination or two in this for her. There's not going to be, but there should be. And Hathaway does a really good job as well. And yeah, definitely, if you find it's on, go see it. Because it's fucking weird and short and crazy. It's sweet. So definitely go see it. What would I give it? 4 out of 5. Like, I can't go 5 because I feel like this is a movie you need to watch a few times to really get a grasp on it. But 4 out of 5 is it moment. So definitely give it a try. Hey, so what do you do on Friday evening? Well, what you do is, if you're in my case, you watch a movie called Eileen and then you immediately watch Final Destination. Because of course I do. So for context, I actually watched Final Destination when it came out at the time. And I enjoyed it. I thought it's quite a clever horror movie. Quite a unique premise. And time's gone on. And I'm older. And it's been, God, nearly probably 16 years since I last saw it. And I still think it's a good movie. And I still enjoyed it. And that's cool. One thing I like about Final Destination is, it's a good premise. And it doesn't overstay its welcome. And that's very important for horror movies. Don't overstay your welcome, because why would you? Like, you know, hour and a half-ish is the perfect sort of time for a horror movie. Especially one with a premise like this, where a lot of it's done as exposition on rung. And in this case, the movie is anchored by Devon Sawyer, who's actually a very good actor. And it's strange seeing him so young in this, because the last thing I saw him in was the Charles Play Chucky TV show, and he's obviously, you know, 20-odd years older, so he has changed quite a bit. But in this, he's really, really fucking young. And it's kind of surreal to watch him, for definitely. And Ali Larter, this was back when they were trying to make her thing. And I actually think she's a pretty good actress. I don't know what happened with her not becoming a star. Maybe it's the fucking backlash and bog-standard bollocks of her hero's characters. Well, despite her acting being really, really good, her characters were not particularly well written, so, you know. But basically, just the Final Destination, isn't it? It's kind of a similar thing to Saw, in that it's mainly, like, the main focus seems to be on the premise and the horror traps and the sort of Rube Goldberg machines, if you will, where it's like these convoluted setups. For the, so the tension comes from the setup of us knowing death is after them. Apparently in this universe, death is not only a metaphysical concept, it's a concept which actually wants to lure people to their doom, I guess, and sets up really bizarre traps and schemes. For example, soap on floor, which combines, forces someone to slip, and then their neck wraps around a shower cord like 10 times. Don't think about the logistics of it, but it's that sort of thing. And one thing I like is there's a lot of creativity to it. You do get a lot of that stupid cop stuff you get in horror movies. There's a fair bit of that, and cops, the FBI are particularly stupid in this movie. And yet, there's something cool about it. It's got a fun vibe to it, which is good, because it makes for an entertaining horror movie and a cool premise. And the use of the Rube Goldberg-style devices and mechanisms and schemes does create a lot of tension which might not otherwise be there. It works and builds and builds and builds and builds and builds. And also has a really terrific plane crash scene. Like, I can't stress that enough. It's actually really, really good and very tense. And so we get, the conflict seems to be them going up against death itself, which may or may not be Tony Todd. Because if you're going to have a personification of chaos and death in a horror movie, why wouldn't you cast Tony Todd? Because he's fucking awesome. And it builds and builds and builds, and there's some impressive setups in there. Unfortunately, the one flaw with it is this movie, they kind of do Okay, they can't do every possible death because that's not possible. But in terms of the setup and layups and payoffs and the general nature of it, they, like most horror movies, peak with the first one, because I don't remember any of the other ones being anywhere near this good. They kind of tended to escalate things more and more and more escalation, but in terms of being better, this is definitely best one. But I'm going to try and watch as many as I can that are on free TV. And that'll be this week's episode. Me watching lots of fun destination movies and rating them on Tony Todd meter, I suppose you can say. This one, he's in it for a bit. So this is probably, I'd say, 3.5 Tony Todd's out of 5. Let's see if Fun Destination 2 can outmatch that. So I watched Extraction 2 last night on Netflix, and I won't vent a while. Not for too long, but just for a bit. This movie has a script by Joe Russo, apparently. That's what it says. It says stories that three people come up with. Okay, so I got a cool foul on that. Now, whether I'm right or wrong, I don't know for sure. But having watched the movie, I'm reasonably confident that this script was not written entirely by a human being. Allow me to explain. I'm sure at some point there was some writing done by human. I'm sure there was. Well, when I say writing, I'm sure there's some editing done by human, because I'm pretty sure this script was done by an AI. How am I sure? Well, firstly, watch the movie. If you watch the movie, focus on the dialogue and the general nature of characterization, and tell me that does not feel like 10,000 other movies combined together. Now, action movies normally do this. We all know this. Anything comes to success, they make a movie about it. You know, they do that. You get something like Die Hard will come out and there'll be 1,000 Die Hard clones, but they won't be copy and paste. They'll have some sense that someone wrote this script, someone with a real imagination wrote this script. This doesn't seem like it. Even the action scenes seem distinctly Frankensteined together, where it's like, what can we do that's been done before, but how can we combine it in a way where it hasn't quite been done this way before, but people who think view, we go and say, that's cool. You'll view it's cool. So to give more context, the movie has a plot, sort of. It's about Chris Hemsworth's character, who apparently isn't dead off first movie, which is fucking ridiculous. His character is hired to extract his former sister-in-law and her kids from a jail in Georgia and get them to a safe area. That's the movie. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, the raid is very simple. Dread is very simple. But this is really, really, really simple, because this has, basically, it's like you typed into an AI system, I want a movie which is a combination of Taken and The Raid, and it spat this out. There is no imagination to this. There is no soul to this. There is no nothing to this. The action is competent. It's in places, it's genuinely well done and well shot and put together. I just don't give shit. I just did not give a single shit. I didn't care. I was watching it. I was like, great. Congratulations. You've done that. You've stitched those 2 weeks worth of shoots into one sequence, so it looks like one shot. Congratulations. Why should I give shit? And I think that's what annoys me. It's like, if you're going to make it a pure action set piece, it needs to be the best action you can possibly imagine. Because if it's not best action you possibly imagine, you need characters to drive you through it. If you don't have action which is really memorable, and you don't have characters who you actually want to survive, and you don't have any real sense of peril, you have nothing. And I equate to, you got like the Steven Seagal action movies from the 90s, like Nico, for example. Nico is the most predictable goddamn movie ever made. So for Steven Seagal, sorry, is not in danger in any stretch of Nico by any possible imagination or avenue or anything. You know he's going to win, but the way it's made, it's got a weird, quirky sense of humour to it, and his acting's so ridiculous, it's unbelievable, but it feels genuine. This doesn't feel genuine. That scene, they won't know who killed Bobby Lupo. That's more memorable than any scene in this movie. And I feel bad for Chris Hemsworth. And then again, do I really? Because I think they all got paid for this one. But yeah, Extraction 2, yeah, I was not impressed. And I actually enjoyed the first one. I was actually told that it wasn't quite as good as I remember it being. But I thought Extraction 1, I mean, single as it was, because Netflix is like, hey, we want to get into Joe Russo, Anthony Russo business. There's a certain amount of cynicism there, but still watchable. But this is just, no fan. Do not watch Extraction. So Final Destination 2. I'll be honest, I zoned out during most of this movie. I don't remember much what happened during it. It was chaotic, it was loud. It was very much a sequel to a sort of horror movie which made famous money. It's, yeah, definitely, you know, like horror movies when they make money in sequel, they're like, oh, we got to amp everything up, even though it doesn't make any sense. They do it for this one, where, you know, everything's amped up and everything's dumber. Not that they've made a bad movie, because they didn't. It's very competent, and it follows roughly the same logic as first one. It's just more the nature of the property, is the fact that now we know the rules. The characters learn the rules a lot quicker, and basically it falls into a sort of more trope formulaic approach. In the first one, there's that mystery element of what's going on, what's happening, what's this? And this one's sort of like, oh, we know death has design, but something's given them signs to stop it. And I think at this point, you can assume that death is literally some sort of amorphic personification of chaos, but it's also a living, breathing being. And it's just off camera every moment, laughing and going, lol, look at this setup for a death that they may or may not interfere with. Oh, I'm so mischievous. Like, I have imagined that death is Loki from the start of the first four movie, where he's just doing stuff to be a mischievous little imp. No, it's just death has no design. He's just like, if I do this, what's going to happen? Low, 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 low. Because so many of these deaths are so convoluted and so ridiculous, they seem more trolling than anything. It's like he just picks people and goes, if I give this person visions of what I'm going to do, how would they react? Almost like this isn't death at all. This is actually the god of mischief, Loki, who's doing this. In fact, that's my new assumption. Loki is the bad guy of this franchise. He's just causing all of this chaos just to see what happens, which actually makes them a lot more amusing if you assume that Tom Hiddleston's responsible for all of this shit. I mean, based on how powerful he is in Loki TV show, that's a very real possibility that he's the one who's doing this. So that'd be amazing, actually. Amazing and dumb, but also amazing. Anyway, back to the movie. It's decent. It's watchable. Their thing is amped up to an absurd degree, and it's just like, it's clear at this point that it's not sci-fi horror anymore. It's a horror comedy. They've really jumped forward, because especially the bit at the end, which is basically a punchline, more than a terrifying horror scene. I mean, some of the deaths are so over the top in this one. You know, you have to give them credit. They staged some inventive sequences and some parts are interesting, but you can already tell that they're running on fumes in terms of the overarching story, because Devon Sawyer is not back, Alex is gone, Clear Rivers goes off this movie, and the highlight for the entire movie, as far as I'm concerned, is Tony Todd, who... Tony Todd is an international treasure, because I don't think he was so much directed as like just let loose with his, with whatever he fancied doing, he was allowed to do, because his performance is so over the top here that it's kind of a 180 from his gothic horror that he did with Candyman, and this one's just like, I'm a horror icon. Although they never really did much with his character in movies, they tend to leave it pretty vague. I mean, we know he's deaf, but the gist of it was that they never actually announced that. They just had him show up and know everyone's names, and it's him. So I'm going to assume he is Loki, because I think that's more amusing. Yeah, so, I mean, not really much more to say about this movie. It was watchable, it was dumb, but it was entertaining. So Final Destination 2, not as good as Final Destination, but a very entertaining movie in its own right, just not a particularly good one. So, I've just finished watching Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing, and I just want to go on record saying I am a huge Spike Lee fan. He's really good. So, the thing about Spike Lee and I love is his movies, how to put this, his movies feel authentic. Now, by which I mean, some of the dialogue is clunky, some of the ways characters act is clunky. There's the plot isn't so much carrying you forward as the characters' actions. And at times they get a bit rambly. But he has his own unique style. He has a cool style. He's always had a cool style. And whether you like the guy as a person or not, he is, for my money, one of the best directors of the last, what, 40 years? Yeah. Because, I mean, he's been putting out bangers for ages. I mean, 25th Hour was a classic. Inside Man's very good. That The Five Bloods is really, really, really fucking good. Malcolm X is one I need to get into a bit more, because it was kind of dry first time I watched it, but I think you need to view it as more, less of a flashy biopic and more a bit matter of fact, I suppose you can say. I mean, it's definitely got hallmarks, a vibe, a slight similar vibe JFK, where it's covering a wider span of time. Although, no, it's not much like JFK. What am I fucking talking about? I mean, I think Oliver Stone did apparently mentor Spike Lee at NYC theme school or something. I can't remember. I'm having bollocks, but I don't know. But Spike Lee's, I think the reason I start getting fascinated by his work was Kevin Smith saying back in the day that he always wanted to do a movie which had the feel of a Spike Lee movie, which took place, I think the way he's saying it was over a single day, but maybe it was regarding seasons. But I just, Spike Lee movies, they're so specific to him. Like, even Summer of Sam, which Summer of Sam gets really, really, really weird and surreal. But as a time capsule for that period of time, and like focusing on how it affected the city, and having as a backdrop for the actual main characters in the movie, I thought it's great. And Do the Right Thing, firstly, it's whopper cast. Like, just good acting from top to bottom. But secondly, it's just, it's one of my favourite types of movies, the almost a day in life, where it's a slice of life, I suppose you can say. Now, to a degree, this does feel a bit heightened, but at the same time, definitely slice of life, where it covers a day in life of this block in New York. And the escalation from, firstly, I love the aesthetic of the heat, being a constant running theme. In fact, you know what? I'm pretty sure I've talked about Do the Right Thing before on this podcast, but I don't give a shit. It's my podcast. And it's a really, really, really good fucking movie. And it's, in fact, I definitely have thought best for, but it's a fucking great movie, so I don't give a shit. It's Spike Lee, guys. Come on. Spike Lee is a goddamn master filmmaker. And it was a good movie to watch, because I've Officially started my second week in my new job. So instead of going to see Scarface at the cinema, I put Do the Right Thing on my TV. And it's a really good transfer, actually. It's a Blu-ray I got from CES, but it's really good quality. And it's a really good movie. And just, I put up, in my personal opinion, like, probably should have been more highly regarded. I know it's very highly regarded and it's listed as a film of influence and a classic and a hallmark in America, where it says it has historical value, and it does. It definitely does have historical value. But it's all just a banging movie in general. And despite the fact that Spike Lee is not a particularly good actor, and I say that being as how I'm not a particularly good actor, it just works. It just works. And 5 out of 5 easy. Easy 5 out of 5. The Squid and Whale is a Noah Baumbach movie from a long time ago. It stars a very young Jesse Eisenberg. It features a pretty good cast. No, it's got Laura Linney in it. Shit, who's the other guy that's got in there? I know the name, I just can't remember who goddamn is. But he's a very good actor. And it's a really good movie. It's just a really intense movie. Oh, Jeff Daniels. Yeah, it's just a really intense movie. And it's really, really good. It's one of those movies where it's by Noah Baumbach, written and directed by him. It's obviously in 2005, this was years and years and years before he kind of broke out and got like Netflix original movies like White Noise. White Noise is really fucking weird, by the way, but it's a very good movie too. But this movie, basically, I'm sure I caught that this movie on podcast as well, but it's all blurring into one. I mean, 8 seasons, what are you going to do? The movie is basically about a married couple. It's like a goddamn looping nightmare of I can't remember what I've done this goddamn podcast anymore. So this movie basically concerns a family, husband and wife who split up, and the oldest son, the youngest son, who have to deal with repercussions of that. And it's a brilliant movie. It's a really, really good movie. It's a very minimal cast. In terms of what it's doing, it's quite minimal. Set in the 80s, it's quite, the dialogue is sharp but sad. It's kind of theatrical in that. It's sort of theatrical in Wes Anderson way, which makes sense because Noah Baumbach and Wes Anderson did team up to make some movies together. And it's definitely got that vibe of somewhat theatrical, but also visual at the same time because it shows off New York. Is it saying New York? I think it's saying New York in quite an interesting way. And it's a good acting showcase. I think most times when you watch movies nowadays, you don't get a sense it's an acting showcase. Or if you do, it's a big bombastic acting showcase rather than something like this, which is much more quiet and reserved and brutal and actually allows you to get the grip of characters. By that I mean it's intense. Like you get characters who aren't good or bad. They're sort of in between. The mum isn't the saint in this movie. The dad isn't the devil. They obviously display characteristics of both, but they're just messed up, fucked up human beings. And kids are too. Now, I can't imagine a big budget studio greenlighting movie like this because it's non-compromising. It's disgusting at points, but in a way that feels realistic. Like this might actually happen. I wouldn't be surprised if parts of this aren't based in Noah Baumbach's life from growing up in the 80s and seeing how life worked. I mean, if you watch Marriage Story, it's a very, very intense movie too. And that's clearly based in part on Noah Baumbach's life and the dissolution of his marriage. And this feels quite the same way. And you can see echoes of this in stuff like Barbie, where there's parts of Barbie which are quite non-compromising. And Noah Baumbach obviously had a hand to a degree in writing that script. Obviously, that movie veers more towards Greta Gerwig and her style. But, I mean, there's elements of this sort of movie. I suppose you can say mumblecore, because Greta Gerwig's obviously a key proponent in mumblecore rise as it went on as a genre. And Noah Baumbach was this way, so their sensibilities meshed quite well there, and meshed in other ways, I'm sure. And it's just a good movie. I mean, it's nice to see a movie which actually gives actors something to do beyond sort of trope, cliche, dull roles. You know, there's an actual sense here where they're pushing actors. I mean, Laura Linney's fantastic in it. Jeff Daniels is great. I mean, he's good in everything. He's amazing in the Jobs movie. Although this is even more uncompromising than that, because it doesn't have the crux of being based too much on actual people, so they'll allow go more interesting direction. But if you can, it's on Netflix. Definitely see Squid and Whale. It's a very, very, very good movie.